an agenda tonight of four local bills, and then we're going to talk about the state capital restoration. So the agenda is before you, members, and to get us going. And by the way, on the first four, we're going to try to keep them to about 10-minute presentations. Senator Metzen, I won't gavel you down, but I may wink at you or something like that. So you get the wink signal. I don't know.
I think you have to flap your tie.
Oh, slap your tie.
That would be not pretty good.
That would be the signal. But Senator Metzen, welcome. Senate File 2079, South St. Paul Flood Wall Extension.
And I see you have a Chairman, guest as members well. Of the committee, thank you very much for hearing this this evening. In front of you, first of all, this is a request for $500,000 for pre-design, preliminary engineering, evaluations, and environmental impact studies of this area. On your desk would be the area we're talking about. If you're familiar, like the Wakota Bridge or 494, in South St. Paul, it connects to Cottage Grove and Newport to the east. The property we're talking about is in the pink. About 180 to 200 acres there that's not protected by the flood wall. The flood wall does go on the north end up to 494 to the bridge. But what we're trying to do is for economic development is to figure out, well, we're going to need a flood wall in here someday, and this would expedite the project and give us a necessary seed money to do the engineering. South St. Paul, as you may or may not know, the last 30, 35 years have lost almost 8,000 union-paying jobs when Swift and Armor and Company pulled out of our city. And believe it or not, 30 years later, we're still fighting back. We're still fighting to get more industry, more development down there. And this would certainly help to bring our community back. And we were declared, I don't know, 30 years ago by the federal government as an economic distressed community. And I think it was a second-class city. And I think South St. Paul was the only city in the state to be declared a second-class designated as an economically depressed area by the United States government. So we've got a lot of things on our side to show the need for this. And the South St. Paul Chamber, it would go from the Wakota Bridge, like I showed you on the north, to the Inver Grove Heights border. And if we get this wall eventually built, we can certainly expand the development in that area. So this is really meaningful. It's I've got with me today the city manager, Steve King from South St. Paul. He'll give you two or three. We're going to stay within the 10 minutes, Mr. Chairman. So, Mr. King.
Senator Metzen, could I just ask, and I think this is the page you were looking at, right?
Yes.
And I'm a little colorblind, but that's pink.
That's correct.
And then we have this, what's this little jettison in? Is that water?
That's water. That's okay. The, what's that plant down there? The
Dakota Bulk.
Okay.
Dakota Bulk. They've got a cut in where they can get the barges in there. And,
okay.
I don't know when they developed that, like 30 years ago or so.
So, but Senator Metzen, would the proposal then be to put I'll call it a flood wall or a dike then along the river?
Or is it in further? That's essentially, Mr. Chairman, what you're saying is we don't know yet.
Okay.
And that's what the money is for. I'm sure we're going to have to go around that inlet there,
sure,
and come back. But this is just crucial for the development of our community. And again, I repeat that we are still fighting back from the departure of our major packing plants, and this would really be, and like I say, the proximity to Wisconsin, the general, we think it has regional impact. It's not just a South St. Paul issue. It's a West Inver Grove, South St. Paul, West St. Paul, Cottage Grove, Newport, the whole area will benefit if this, what could be wonderful property, is developed. So,
Senator Metzen, and we'll get to your witness. Is this, generally speaking, stockyard land?
This is just a little bit south.
Okay.
But there are some stockyards-related companies in there. There's a hide processing plant that still is in existence, maybe another one or two Senator Rosen's plant is probably like three blocks. You might, I don't know if you know about that, but one of her plants is about three blocks north of there. So I think the hide company gets some hides from, she's there. I didn't know you were here. But she's familiar with South St. Paul and the region we're talking about.
Just one last, is this commercially developed at this point, or is it?
Well, Mr. Chairman and members, it's just hodgepodge. It's
working
stuff
to survive.
Okay. Subjected to flooding.
Sure.
So we can't get any good development down there because
sure.
Who wants to come in?
Okay.
So
good.
There are 50, 80, 100-year-old buildings down there. There was an old cement plant that got flooded out every year, but they could survive, I guess, even with the
sure.
floods. And,
okay.
Some other things of that nature. There's a rod and gun club down there that gets flooded out every year. And
sure.
So,
was there a question over here?
No.
Mr. Okay. Chair.
Question over here. Senator Langston.
Mr. Chair, I believe they're listed in on the regular flood control projects. I know Dave could probably tell you whether they're listed, but the intention is that they're listed.
Senator Langston, you're talking about the DNR?
Yes,
flood.
Yes.
Okay.
I know Inver Grove Heights is, and we did get some money for a lift station here in the last session, but that was for the other end of the where the wall was already up.
Okay, good.
But
Mr. King, do you want to
really, this would really jumpstart this whole 200 acres down there, and it's prime land. Well, it could be prime land with the wall.
Mr. King, you want to offer some comments?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thanks for offering me the opportunity. I'm going to pick up on where the senator was going with his comments. For those who are not aware, we're a very old city. We're celebrating our 125th anniversary this year. Much of that history has been as an industrial town and with a working river, packing plants, stockyards. I think everyone knows our reputation. Over the last roughly half century, we're making the evolution now to a different perspective with regard to the river. We've separated our sanitary sewers and our storm waters, which used to flow together into the river. We've constructed a flood wall, but it's on the north side of I-494, so there isn't anything protecting the south side. We've removed all the massive buildings that are the most part of that packing house tradition, and they're residing in the ground elsewhere in the community. Developing there, as the senator alluded to, is very, very difficult, though. We're challenged with the soil types and what's buried in the ground. Often it's a mystery when we get in there. We have been working to change the character of the land adjacent to the river, recognizing there's a new approach towards the river. We were in the leadership role in terms of establishing the Mississippi River Regional Trail and extended that through our whole community on top of the levee that was constructed north of 494. And we're working with the city of St. Paul, Ramsey County, and Dakota County to make access to the downtown areas a commuter route possible. We've built an 87-acre community park on top of a demolition landfill that's at the northern part of our community, and we're filling it out in incremental pieces. When we saw the end coming in our long wait for the Wakota Bridge project to come to completion, we started looking at what the opportunities would be south of 494. As the senator alluded to, it's an area that's very, very challenged. The buildings are dilapidated. There's many empty buildings that aren't being used at all. And we do have some problems with smells coming from very old buildings that have a tanning and hide function. We have located a DNR launch, boat launch, just south of the Wakota Bridge. But once you get past that, then you run out of flood protection. We, in the last few years now, I'd say roughly 3 to 4 years, we've partnered with the state and Dakota County to bring much-needed street improvements to Concord, which is the main arterial road serving this, and to upgrade the utilities in there, again, working to separate any sewers that remain. We've also worked with the Metropolitan Council and Dakota County on finishing that regional trail, so now it goes all the way to our southern border. And then finally, last year, we participated in the Livable Communities Act program and were awarded a grant to do a draft study for how we could enhance and redevelop this area of South St. Paul, which is south, again, of 494 and not protected by a flood wall. While that plan gives us a lot of optimism and opportunities for revitalization, we've got some key barriers, and the key barrier is the fact that we don't have a flood wall protecting that area. Until there's a greater assurance of flood protection, we don't think there's probably going to be a lot of substantial change or risk-taking. So we've come to you to ask for the opportunity to get a jump start on this area to position us for redevelopment. The senator has correctly outlined The struggle we've had in making the conversion from an industrial town to a close-in suburb. And so we're looking for this appropriation to help us to do the studying and do the preliminary engineering and the design for the levy that would protect this area.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Langston.
I would move the bill, whether this goes separate or in the rest of the flood control. It probably doesn't matter that much, but I think it's high priority and needs to be done. So I move it.
Mr. Chairman.
Yep.
Could I respond to Senator Langston's question?
Sure.
The city of South St. Paul is not on the current list of flood mitigation cities.
Mr. Chair, we'll have to see to it that it is. So they got an option there one way or the other.
Right. And I would agree with that. Good. Anyone else on this? Thank you, Senator Metzen and Mr. King. Thank you for being here tonight. And we appreciate it.
Your positive response.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Your testimony lives in infamy.
Yep, that's for sure.
I think we'll just move down to number three here if we can. We've got some people from Wadena. Is that all right with you, Senator Sieben? They've got a long way to drive back, and it would be nice to give them an opportunity to get out of here as quickly as possible. So Senator Gretchen Hoffman, Senate File 1532, the Wadena replacement of tornado-destroyed community facilities. Welcome, Senator Hoffman, and look forward to your comments and those of your testifiers.
I'll just let him, Mr. Chair, I'll just let him set up their display here quickly, or I'll start. Senate File 1532 is a bonding request for $4.75 million. As many of you know, some of you weren't here, but many of you were, on June 17, 2010, a Category 4 tornado hit Wadena and destroyed a good section of their town, including a lot of their community buildings, their community center, their swimming pool, their school. And over the course of the last 2 years, Wadena's been able to rebuild. They've had some economic impact, obviously, from the tornado, and they are still in the process of rebuilding. And this is one of the projects that they have worked really hard on in the last couple of years, especially since I got into office. I've worked with them quite a bit to make sure that the center will fit the ability that their town would have to support it. And they've done a tremendous job in getting the bill down to what one that I feel that I can support and advocate for. And so with that, I'm going to turn it over to Mayor Wayne Walden and have him tell the story of the city and the tornado and how they've recovered and how this will help Wadena in the future.
Thank you, Senator, and welcome, Mayor.
Thank you, Chair Senjum, members of the committee, Senator Hoffman, for that introduction. Again, as the Senator said, June 17, 2010 is a date that many of the folks who traveled with us from Wadena and some of you will never forget. That's when a tornado came through our town and changed our community forever. It destroyed over 100 homes, impacted 300 others in some way, took out ball fields, tennis courts, swimming pool, high school, community center, and fairgrounds buildings. In special session in October 2010, Governor Tim Pawlenty and the legislature in special session made communities whole by matching 25% of the 75 that FEMA gives in a community declared disaster. That did help. It was a public disaster that hit Wadena. That session brought additional help by providing Wadena with $750,000 at that time in planning money to plan, design a wellness center to go alongside the high school, which was destroyed by that project. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Wadena has been planning for 21 months. And we bring today our project, which will help us as part of our recovery effort. This is the time to complete this project. This is a result of a natural disaster. The Wadena Wellness Center is appropriately and responsibly designed and sized. Our community is behind the project. Local fundraising is underway. Local businessman Michael Craig, behind me, co-chair and with us today, is wrapping up the private fundraising stage. He is very confident that we will meet our fundraising goal of $2 million. We will meet our 45% match. This is economic urgency for our town. We can start this project immediately and start construction, putting dirt out of the ground this fall. Wadena is coming up on its third summer without a swimming pool. Our community does not want to make it four. The Community Center Board and Hockey Association moved forward and constructed a building on the old ice slab that was torn off the slab right there. They made this move to save the Hockey Association. Our town has lost residents because of this disaster. They saved the association by doing this, preventing them from having to skate outside for another winter. By taking this part of the project off of the docket, this saves $6.5 million off the cost of our capital bonding project. The community center means economic development for Wadena by bringing many people into town, in turn keeping hotels, restaurants, and other businesses busy. Without it, we've lost four businesses in the last 6 months. We need this project. Dean Uzelman, our economic development director, who's with us today, works with a network that entertains companies looking to relocate to Minnesota and other surrounding states. An important part of their decision on where they locate are the amenities like this wellness center that they and other employees can be a part of. The city, the school, and the community have worked together to plan this project. It'll be located right next to the new $42 million 5-12 high school, which is located right there. You can see it's immediately across the street. That proximity could be bridged in the future by a skyway. It's not currently in the budget. In 2011, the University of Wisconsin Public Health ranked Wadena County 84th out of 85 counties in Minnesota for health. My goal as mayor is that every Wadena Deer Creek age high school and elementary student would enjoy a free membership in this wellness center and make physical fitness part of their daily routine. It'll impact them not only today, but for the rest of their lives. In closing, the Wadena Wellness Center project is different than most of the requests that you have seen. This request is the direct result of a natural disaster. The legislature has given us money to plan. We've planned. It's time to build. Now, at this time, I'd like to introduce Kathy Clean. Part of our aquatics includes a warm water therapy pool. In addition to our members being able to use this, Tri-County Healthcare, a private community hospital, is prepared to sign a long-term lease allowing providing services to their patients, but it also helps us become economically viable in the long term. At this point in time, I'd like to introduce Kathy Clean.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Ms. Clean, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and the remaining members of the committee. I'm here to talk passionately about our patients of Tri-County Hospital. And within this project, we want to restore doing what we call warm water therapy. We've been trying to do therapy in a pool. It was actually part of the American, which is the motel. Regulations have changed, so we cannot do that. We no longer have therapy available for our patients. One of the biggest things that we can bring to a patient's recovery, whether it's a patient with Parkinson's, spinal cord injury like my daughter Anna, or patients with MS, or elderly patients that are recovering from knee and hip replacements, is to combine physical therapy with warm water therapy. It's been proven that the recovery time is diminished. Plus, they are able to have long-term sustained exercise that they cannot do outside of the water. So having to have stopped that program is really detrimental to our patients. This is the only way that we can restore aquatic therapy for physical therapy patients by combining with the city of Wadena with this project. In order to do effective therapy, we have to have water that's around 90 degrees, and so that we'll be able to bring back the therapy to our area. As you know, critical access hospitals like ours, Tri-County Hospital, funds are so limited, we would never be able to do this on our own. So being part of the project combined is the only way that we can go forth into the future. The other thing is we are one of the lowest income counties in our area, so we have one of the highest percentage of Medicaid patients. So when my daughter was paralyzed from a car accident, we had the resources to drive her down to the Courage Center for warm water therapy. Most of our patients do not have that. And so we aren't able to give the highest quality of therapy that we can and actually reduce costs in the long run. We were able to see that Anna's therapy actually could be reduced by the combination of the therapy in Wadena as well as the warm water therapy. And so we really look to be this to be one of those key things that can keep costs down into the future. And having such a high elderly population, as well as the students that Mayor Wolden spoke of, we really think we can make a difference into the future. So this is the only way that we'll probably restore the warm water therapy to our community.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Clean. Does your daughter wish to comment on any of this? Certainly welcome to.
I'm Anna Hinkle.
Welcome.
Welcome. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I got hurt when I was 16. When I was doing therapy at Courage Center, which is 3 hours from my house, we had to drive. My parents, like my mother said, we had the funds and everything and the ability. I was an only child, so that helped. But not many people do. They have many children, full-time jobs, and a lot of other responsibilities where they cannot do that. And this is a great therapy, essential therapy, and for anybody, even for little kids to want to go into warm water is so much better. They actually want to do therapy because they're not going to be cold, or anybody. I'm sure all of you would love to be in a 90-degree bathtub than a 70-degree bathtub. So it helps a lot. And it just, because when you're in a warm water and you are paralyzed, you feel like you can walk again. Or any part that's painful for you to move or anything, you can do in water. So that's all. Thank you.
Thank you so much. That helped. I didn't really understand warm water therapy that well, but thank you. Questions? Yes.
Mr. Chair and Senator, are you planning a therapy pool as well as a regular kind of lap pool, or is there going to be just one pool? Tell us a little bit about that.
Mr. Mayor, are you going to cover that one?
I can. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Higgins, yes, as part of our comprehensive project, there is a lap pool combined with a sort of a family pool, but over in the corner is a therapy pool, basically a therapy center. You don't do jacuzzis anymore. They're not really sanitary. So that's one of the things that we're looking at is a controlled area, which actually part of the lease, again, that would help us in the long-term sustainability of this. The therapy office would actually be located right there in that therapy pool, and they'd be able to have hours during the day of operation. And then after 4:30 and on weekends, it would be open to the members of the Wellness Center.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Good. Anyone else? Okay, well, thank you, Senator, and thank you, Mr. Mayor, and other guests. We appreciate you being here tonight.
Thank you, members. Okay. I would really encourage you to look at this project. These are extenuating circumstances that Wadena's been through, and I have to tell you, I was there the night of the tornado, and you can't even believe the difference in the town from the night of the tornado till now. So these folks have worked incredibly hard, so I just hope that you seriously consider their project for the bill. Thanks.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman.
At least they'll meet the requirements.
Senator Sieben, you're here? Okay.
Yeah.
Welcome, Senator Sieben.
Thank you.
Senate File 2030.
Mr. Chairman.
Cottage Road, Grove, rather, Business Incubator.
Yes, Mr.
Welcome.
Chairman, thank you very much for hearing this proposal and members of the committee. This bill would provide $50,000 from bond proceeds to the Commissioner of Employment and Economic Development for a grant to the City of Cottage Grove. The city is vacating its current City Hall facility to build a new City Hall and Public Safety Committee, and I think that this is actually an interesting project that the EDA of the city has come forward with. The building is in the center of Cottage Grove on 80th Street, right off of Highway 61, and the EDA and the city has decided that they would like to make the vacant building, turn the vacant building into a business incubator. And because I didn't necessarily know what it was, I'll read you the definition of a business incubator or a business accelerator or incubator. It says the purpose is to provide a supportive environment that fosters success with things such as business coaching, marketing assistance, networking activities, rents below market rate, possible links to investors and strategic partner linkages, synergy between participants, technology, and general office needs. So really, this $50,000 would go towards this public-private partnership where the city would screen applicants and then hopefully foster job growth in the region by providing these types of services within this building that's going to be vacated. So with me tonight is Ryan Schrader, who's the city administrator for the city of Cottage Grove, who can speak more about the project.
Welcome, Mr. Schrader. We appreciate you being here tonight and look forward to your comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. As the senator mentioned, we have a seldom available opportunity to do something creative, interesting, and hopefully helpful. As we vacate our current city hall, which will happen in October or November of this year, we could simply put our property on the market, sell it as an available either redevelopment parcel or as a kind of a going concern private sector opportunity. We believe we can accomplish more by maintaining control of the property and running it as either a business incubator or business accelerator. There's they're sort of synonymous terms. According to Forbes, in the last decade, 300 technology incubators have sprung up in the U.S. Incubators now host about 6,000 companies. A 2009 study by the U.S. Department of Commerce's Economic Development Administration found that for each $10,000 in EDA investment, incubators created 45 jobs, compared to road building adding just 5 jobs for the same amount of money. In the state of Minnesota, we really don't have that many technology-related incubators, and most of those are owned either privately or by 501c3 corporations. The differentiation between what we're proposing to do and those incubators is that we're not proposing to take an equity stake in the businesses that would utilize our facility. And we're proposing to charge rents that cover just our CAMs or just our common area charges. We don't have a profit motivation. Our whole goal is to create jobs and opportunity. As I mentioned, this sort of opportunity doesn't happen very often. We don't vacate buildings very often. And as we vacate this building, it's fully depreciated. We don't have a mortgage payment. We don't have rent payment, and that allows us to afford startup and early-stage companies opportunities that most folks just can't provide. Our building is 27,000 square feet. Of course, it's an office building, and so we believe the natural tenant is a tech-related tenant, but the building does need some improvements in order to facilitate that goal, and that's why we're making the request here. Our goals and project outcomes, first and foremost, we believe that we're creating jobs and economic opportunity. We project that we'll have 50 employees functioning out of this building at full occupancy. We believe the lease-up period is probably over a three-year period of time. At an average estimated rate of pay at $20 an hour, that's $2 million in annual payroll. Our second goal is to provide a business location for early stage companies that facilitates growth and success of those companies. Third, our goal includes to graduate these accelerator businesses into privately held tenancy or ownership at some point in time. So effectively, we're kind of facilitating the farm team so that eventually they can graduate to either owning their own properties or leasing at market rates, which gets to the fourth goal or outcome, which is to provide tenancy at rates, as I mentioned, that just cover the common area charges. In our marketplace, The market rents, including CAMs, is about $19 a square foot. Our goal is to just cover our operating expenses, which is $6 a square foot. That's a significant opportunity for our clients, our tenants, to get the startup that they need in order to create jobs and business opportunities. Again, our request is for the infrastructure portion. We're taking the operating risk, but we do need to make some improvements to the building, such as running additional pairs of phone lines, doing tenant improvements and things like that, and that's why we're making the request. Thank you.
Any questions?
Chairman.
Senator Metzen?
I'm just thinking, Mr. Chairman, members, this could fit in pretty well with the angel investor things that the Jobs Committee has been looking at for the last, actually last 3-4 years.
And, yeah.
I know Senator Thomasoni and Senator Peterson and I, Senator Miller, we've been talking about that, and I think something like this would kind of fit hand in glove with the seed money from angel investors. So I think you're onto something here. So that if you do get this going, I think that's one of the avenues where you could get that upfront money.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Sieben.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Senator Metzen. My understanding of the angel tax credit is that those monies go to the particular companies, and maybe that's what you were referring to. This is actually kind of innovative because it would be money, relatively modest amount of money, $50,000, that would help the city launch this project to get those companies to locate in the city of Cottage Grove and provide the job growth for the surrounding region. So, and I think that Mr. Schrader can speak to this, but part of the opportunities that would be provided if they get this going is that then the city would help contract for services for some of those the opportunities that are available to companies, so that the city, in other words, through their contractor, could help make these small businesses aware of the angel tax credit. Maybe that's what you're talking about.
So
that's
Mr.
how I see them.
Chairman, that's Senator Nelson and I were visiting, and she's on the committee also, and we think this would be a conduit or a tool that could be used in your situation. I think it'd be the right fit. So it's something to look at once you get this done.
Senator Sieben, I'm trying to remember, and maybe Senator Langsa can help me. It seems to me we had a stop on a bonding tour about 4 or 5 years ago. Do you remember this? It doesn't matter a lot, but Senator Marco was maybe in one of our last months. And again, it's immaterial. I think I've been there.
You have.
Okay.
It was a different project, Mr. Chair. Than,
okay.
You're always welcome to come down to Cottage Grove. It's only less than 15 minutes from the Capitol here.
Okay. Any other questions on this one? Senator Stump?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Did you say that the City Hall has 27,000 square feet, roughly?
Mr. Chair, Senator, yes.
Okay. And so I'm sure there will probably be other monies that will go into remodeling it besides the $50,000.
Mr. Schroeder?
Yep, Mr. Chair, Senator. We think our the folks that will be managing this for us, the management company, has estimated that our improvement need is $200,000, and we intend to fundraise that outside of the capital appropriation.
Okay. The only, Mr. Chairman, and I'm sure you've already thought about it, is that, you know, some things are bondable, you know, with state bonding dollars, and some things aren't. And I think I could be wrong. I know Mr. Jensen knows all the answers there, but new telephone lines and things that may be, depending on the project, may or may not be bondable, but so that's just a thought.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Sieben.
I think that's why you see the, as I said, the relatively modest request of only $50,000, because that was the portion that we thought could be bondable according to the state proceeds of the versus the overall request of or the overall price sure. tag of over $200,000.
Yeah. Senator Stephen, yeah, you're right. The office supplies, equipment, computers, those things are not bondable. And so it's bricks and mortars and sheetrock and wood or metal studs, whatever. Okay, anything else? Well, thank you, Senator Stephen, very much, and thank you, Mr. Schroeder, very much for being here. And
very much, Mr. Chair and committee members.
Sure. Appreciate it. Next, Senator Rosen. There she is. Senator Rosen, Senate File 1703, the Truman Stormwater Lines.
Thank you, Mr.
Welcome
Chair
to the committee.
And members. What you see is what you get here. I have the Truman, the city administrator, woke up with vertigo this morning, and they have city council meeting tonight, so no testifiers, and I'll, so I'll
you
make it
You
could
probably
very
explain a stormwater line
Yeah,
to
I
us.
Think I can do this, actually. Truman is a little community in my Senate district of 1,000 people, and they sit at the basin of a 5,000-acre watershed district, so they're kind of in this big bowl, and every time there's 2 or 3 inches of rain, it just wipes out the entire pipelines. And so this last flood in September 2010, they received 30 inches of rain in 24 hours. So there was this huge path of flooding that went through basically my Senate district. We also had tornadoes that year, and I always say that all we missed were the locusts because it was just September of 2010 was a really tough year for southern Minnesota. And this is an ag-based economy, and it's it just destroyed. As you can imagine, 30 inches of rain was really, really tough. 80% of the homes received basement flooding and a loss of all their personal belongings in 2/3 of the city. And for FEMA dollars, it has to reach – it has to go above the first floorboards. And for the city administrator who has vertigo, went and looked at his flooding and was about this far from the first floor. So they didn't receive as much funding as they possibly could. Then Governor Pawlenty did come down and look at the devastation. And we, as a legislature, passed the legislation to help fund 25% of the public infrastructure and cleanup cost. And a thank you to everybody who voted for that. That was a big deal. But Truman's stormwater system was constructed in the 1950s. And in the last 3 years, Truman has invested very much in this public and public safety and a public health issue for their community. In 2009, they had phase one project, and they worked with the county to extend an open ditch 1 mile to Truman to eliminate a mile of 18-inch diameter pipe, which was the main outlet for the storm water to leave Truman. So they had all these pipes that were draining into this 18-inch pipeline, and it was just a mess. And there they borrowed $400,000 for that improvement. In 2010, the city constructed phase two, which is 1,500 feet of 60-inch diameter outfall pipe from the new open ditch into the city to connect other undersized collector trunk lines, and that was another $400,000 that they borrowed to complete the project. Paying the debt with a tax levy and a new stormwater utility fee to each resident and business. And the third and last major part of the plan is to eliminate the flooding in Truman, and that's what we are here in front of you today for $1,250,000. So that would consist of running a larger 42-inch diameter trunk line to two areas of town that have this repeated flooding every time they get 2 to 3 inches of rain. They have this flooding issue because they just sit in this huge bowl. Like I said, it's a watershed that just drains into this area. These trunk lines will replace the current 12-inch and 15-inch diameter trunk lines that are severely overloaded from other lines feeding into them. And they can no longer get flood insurance because of this repeated flooding, that every time they get 3 inches of rain, it's just a mess. And FEMA did not compensate anymore because, like I said, it just went up to the floorboard. So it's not really a public facilities authority issue. It's more of a FEMA issue, but the community is seeking relief from this committee. So with that, Mr. Chair, they are also, they have some street improvement bonds that are coming due here shortly that will help pay for the other part of the $2.5 million that this project is going to cost to finish this phase three. Okay. It's a mess down there. It's a mess.
So,
and you know that, Mr. Chair, you had a whole town wiped out in your district.
Yeah, a lot of water that day.
Yep, there was.
Senator Rosen, so is the request
1.4 million, 1.5? 1.25. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
And any questions, Senator Rosen? Yes. Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Rosen, was this project on any MPCA list, or did the city look at some of the new stormwater rules MPCA put together that largely consist of straight grants if you implement new technologies?
Senator
Chair
Rosen.
Senator Jungbauer, I don't think so. Like I said, this is they are working with Region 9 to apply for some more money through FEMA, if possible. But they've done just about they work with all the available entities out there.
Okay, Senator Rosen or Jungbauer, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Rosen, I'd be happy to work and help you to contact the right people at the PCA. As many people know, I did my whole series of love letters to the PCA for many years on the Senate floor, and they did indeed start rewriting their stormwater rules and put a huge piece of that for using new technology in the form of grants instead of just loans. So it's an extremely great program and helps utilize a lot of the new technologies that do better and cheaper.
Senator Jungbauer, this is, it sounds like a large pipe is what's being suggested here. Is that new technology? Or?
Mr. Chair, members, depending on the way you collect it and the way you treat it as it goes before it goes through the pipe or after it goes through the pipe, indeed becomes new technology. I worked on several projects with some engineers along the 494 corridor with MnDOT where it's extremely hard to get easement to collect that water and get rid of it, and we did a really neat, innovative job with things down in that corridor, taking very little space and getting rid of 100% of the stormwater.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Jensen. You're almost. Okay. Mr. Jensen, I'm sorry.
I have here the MPCA list for 2012 and 349 projects, and Truman is not on the list.
Mr.
It would be a long time before they would become eligible for funding.
Unless they used
Mr. Jensen, they would be 350 if they were to sign up tonight. Is that right?
Perhaps not, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Mr. Chair, they can jump to the front of the list using that new technology. That was the other issue there. Got to use every trick in the
book. Senator Stump.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Senator Rosen. What is the total cost of the project? Is that the total cost of the project?
Mr. Chairman, thank you, Senator Stump. It's $2.5 million is the total cost of the project, and the request is $1.25 million. And like I said, they have some street improvement bonds that will be coming up that they'll just roll over for that. So.
Okay. Senator Rose, how big is Truman?
1,000 people.
1,000
people.
Is Mr. Chairman, just curious, is there a watershed district in that area?
Senator Rosen?
Mr. Chair and Senator Stump, there is. They are at the tail end of this 5,000-acre watershed, and they literally sit in this big bowl every time. Actually, to the west of Truman got 15 inches of rain, and Truman is, oh, excuse me, yeah, 15 inches of rain in an hour or something like that. But over the city received 30 inches of rain in 24 hours last year, or in 2010. It was just a mess, yeah.
Mr. Chairman, has there been a discussion with the watershed about possibly trying to approach the problem with, you know, some other kinds of projects besides just this, you know, like impoundments, diversions, a host of things that might protect Truman without having to, without, mm-hmm. I mean, I think up in the Red River Valley, many of the watershed districts have a similar, I mean, not many of the watershed districts, many of the communities have a similar problem where the water all comes together in the Red River. And so like overland flooding, which is really what that is, you know, if you hold the water back, whether it's with an impoundment or some other practice of some sort, you can protect the communities at least to a certain extent from being deluged with 30 inches of rain.
Mr. Chair and Senator, they did in phase one in 2009, they worked with Martin County and they to extend an open ditch 1 mile to Truman. That would eliminate a lot of that stormwater and help it leave Truman. But even in the 30-inch rain in 24 hours, it was just, you know, just it was just too much, right? And of course, it was the 2010 flood was storm. It was sewer. It was a terrible type of mixture.
I remember Senator Rosen, your story of the nursing home, as I recall.
Yes, Truman, that was in, right? Right, in New Richland, Mr. Chair. Mm-hmm. That's right.
I would just offer, we had a flood meeting last night, Pine Island, Orinoco, Zumbra Falls, Hammond, and so on. They're working with the Mankato, it's not no longer Mankato, it's Minnesota State University Water Resource Center in Mankato, and they have some flood assessment tools, electronic tools, computer tools, which were really pretty innovative and might be helpful.
Mr. Chair, and back to Senator Stump's comment, too, I think they work continually on this issue of the flooding, but I know in this 30-inch rain they had to have the big hoses, big, huge hoses, and irrigation hoses, and they pumped it a mile out of town just to get it up and over that hump. It was pretty amazing. So they had three of those going into different creeks all around. Yeah.
Okay, any other questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I hope you'll consider it. Thank
you. Thank you. Senator Higgins, we have the capital restoration project coming up, but I know they're visiting over there about this Washburn project. Are you in any position to be able to present that at this point, or if so, we could certainly let you. If not, we can.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Just as they're discussing it over there. Could you give us a little bit of enlightenment as to how many more meetings we might have? And
well, Senator Stump, that's a good question. We're near to the last one here, I think, as we've talked, and that's why I'd offered to Senator Higgins and her associate there the opportunity to hear the Washburn Center, and somehow it didn't get on the agenda, and I felt bad about that and was maybe wanting to try to work that in tonight. If not, maybe another meeting or so, but probably no more than one more meeting, if that. And if we can work this Washburn thing out, well, this will be the last meeting. And as you maybe have heard, rumored the House is coming out with a bill soon, and I think we would try to, you know, get one ready, and you know, share it with the committee and work it through. Maybe towards the end of this week.
Mr. Chairman, the reason I asked is that there's a number, well, myself, I'll just talk about, had a request in for a hearing on a project up at Northland Community and Technical College.
Okay.
It was $300,000, and it had to do with the unmanned vehicles, the aerial vehicles, and I know we had been up there and I believe looked at it, but that's a very important project for that area and I think for the economic development of the state, too.
No, I think, Senator Stump, that of all the projects we've seen, that was that was upper tier. There's no question about that, at least in my mind. And I think a lot of the members who saw it, if we can...
I'm just trying to refresh my brain.
Let me talk to my committee administrator. We'll see. We'll find out if we can, in some fashion, hear that. I just don't know what the list is.
Mr. Chair.
But we'll try to do that. Yes.
Right here.
Sorry.
I have a question in that regard. I remember that project. It was, as you said, very, I think, very insightful and very forward-thinking. My question is, where is that on the Minsky list, or has that come to higher ed? Did that go
Senator
through
Stump?
Higher ed?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Nelson, the traditional Minsky list is formed over, you know, probably way before this project actually, you know, kind of surfaced. And part of the that's why, if you remember, when the chancellor was here, I questioned him about what happens when you have a project that has tremendous potential. And he said, oh, yeah, we have ability to make changes. Well, their ability to make rapid changes is is not that great.
Okay, thank you. We're getting copies.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Senator Langsett.
I remember discussing the Minsky list when we were up at Thief River Falls. And I remember when I was chair one time, we put in $10 million that wasn't even requested. That Billy Graham property over there in Minneapolis, right next to the Community and Technical College. So I think there are times that things come up late that we as a legislature can decide. Obviously, the Minsky list is an advisory, and we always try to stick close to it rather than jumping around, you know. But it certainly would not be unprecedented if we put something in that wasn't on the list, particularly when it's a fairly small amount like that.
And, Mr.
Senator,
Chairman,
Senator
if by chance you do have a time to listen to some of the testimony, there's going to be some very important decisions made in the probably somewhere around September, and relating to the ability to use airspace and Minnesota in that area and North Dakota have a kind of a joint request, I suppose it would be called, to be one of the areas. I think there's only going to be a few in the United States that would allow that restricted airspace to be used for unmanned vehicles. And so the potential, I think, is tremendous for attracting some very good companies into Minnesota via that program.
Well, it was a great project. We'll try to work with you and see what we can do here. And I think I think for those of us that saw it, it stood tall, very tall. I still have pictures on my camera. Okay, Senator Higgins, you have been very tolerant.
Mr. Chair,
I hope you gather up a few notes and
trying
Mr.
to get
Hedges.
This back in my brain again. So,
okay,
this is a bonding proposal for $5 million for the Washburn Center for Children. I've known this facility as the Washburn Child Guidance Center, and it probably was named a whole lot of other things over its 128-year history. It is an organization that works with Minnesota kids who have mental health challenges. And a statistic for you to remember is one out of every five children in Minnesota will experience mental health challenges, but only 20% of those kids will actually get the help that they need. This organization has been doing a lot of early identification and treatment with kids for a very long time and doing really great work. They are bursting at the seams in their building, and and their building is located in South Minneapolis, and they are looking at a site in North Minneapolis, very near the senior citizen center that you may have read in the newspaper, where it has a holistic approach when it's going to have the YWCA or the YM a health facility and all those kinds of things right there with it. So now we've got the kids' center being proposed just a couple of blocks away. I'm very excited about it. The head of the capital campaign is Don Shelby from WCCO. We have some other Minnesota luminaries, such as Tubby Smith and Ann Bancroft, who are also helping on the capital campaign. One of the great things about this proposal is that it is not just providing a building for the kids to get the help that they need, but it's also training the next generation of the clinicians who will work with kids. And they have they are creating the Washburn Training Institute that will make sure that we have enough professionals to do the work that needs to be done for the kids. And we have had some generous donations to the capital campaigns already. General Mills Foundation, Cargill Foundation have both stepped up with early money, and that's really important to get this going. And if we can have the state be a partner as well, I think it can get off the ground and help with the kids who need the help.
Senator Jungbar.
I want to say for the committee and all the members, take very close note here. This is probably one of those items that Don Shelby and I agree on. So I think this is an important issue.
Thank you. Is that good or bad?
I think it's good.
How about the 18-inch pipe? Does he agree with you there? So.
No, it's got to be bigger. We like bigger pipes.
Senator Higgins, do you know, is they have an existing facility in South Minnesota. Are you going to abandon that, or is this an expansion to another facility in the north side? The real question, are they going to sell the old one?
They will sell the old facility and build new.
Okay.
Anytime anybody wants to move to the north side, I'm in for it. So.
And Senator Higgins, we caught you off guard here on this, but so this is a treatment center for
youngest Minnesota.
Children of the mental illness. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
We use that big word.
You did.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, Mr. Hedges?
Does that mean kind of connect things?
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Bob Hinches. I represent the Washburn Center for Children. Our executive director is not here tonight, and he's the one who knows the most about this about this project. I think we have been fortunate to meet with most of the members of the committee and have provided some materials in those meetings, and we'd certainly be happy to provide those materials to anyone who doesn't have them and would like them. I'd like to make just a couple of comments, if I could. The request is for $5 million, and that would leverage $16 million of private money to build this new facility. The Washburn has doubled its the number of children it treats each year in the last 6 years. So its facility in South Minneapolis is absolutely inadequate. And the facility has adjacent buildings, and its foundation isn't strong enough to support additional floors on top, so they have no choice but to build a new building. Washburn has that main office. It has satellites in Minnetonka and Brooklyn Park. It has it's in 18 schools in Eden Prairie, Bloomington, and Minneapolis. And it also has in-home programs in Dakota and Ramsey and Hennepin counties.
We got to quiet these people down here. So we got to respect our witness.
They're talking too much over this.
I know. I'm sorry, Mr. Hatches.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is not a residential facility. It's daycare. It's outpatient care, and they treat kids with the full range of mental disorders, from depression, anxiety, to attention deficit, and so forth. And in addition to, as Senator Higgins said, in addition to providing mental health services to kids, it also trains about 80 licensed psychologists, family counselors, and social workers each year. These folks have had academic training, and what Washburn does is give them some practical advice so they can do an even better job. I would just like to mention three things. Washburn is really recognized as a national leader in providing mental health services to children. It's all it does. It is treat, diagnose, and treat children. And the other community mental health centers around the state look to Washburn for advice on how to be most effective providing services to kids. The startling statistic to me is that only, as Senator Higgins said, only 20% of the kids in Minnesota who need mental health services are receiving them. And that may have something to do with the stigma. No parent wants to acknowledge that their child has mental health issues. Maybe lack of education. So parents don't recognize the signs that say the child needs help. But still, 80% is a great unmet need. And the way I like to look at this is it's $5 million of state money leveraging $16 million of private money to put toward meeting this need. I mean, the state doesn't have the money to do it, and hopefully this in small measure will help meet that need. And finally, the main thing here is mental health services for children. But I'd suggest that there are some economic and government spending issues involved here. What I mean by economy is somebody did made an estimate. The whole country, all ages, people receiving mental health or having mental health disorders. And they came up with a total counting treatment, the cost of treatment, and more important to the economy, lost productivity. In the case of Washburn, unless kids are treated effectively and early, they will fail at school. They'll probably drop out of school, and they will not become the productive workers that our economy needs. The number on treatment and lost productivity is $247 billion a year in the United States. So I do think there's economic impact. Government spending, 70% of the kids who are incarcerated have mental health disorders. And certainly, again, effective early treatment of kids can save some significant amount of money, for example, in the criminal justice system. And Washburn's success rate by several different measures is between 80 and 95%. So it can help kids, and it wants to help kids. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hedges. Any questions of either Senator Higgins or Mr. Hedges? You did not, I don't think, comment that the government or governor did put this in a supplemental bill of, I believe, last week. So
yes, that's right.
Yes,
that's new to the to the project, and good news for you.
Yes. So thank you for letting us be part of the agenda tonight.
Well, thank you so much, and
thank you very much.
Okay, we're going to set up now and take a look at the Capitol Restoration Project. I don't know how long it's going to take to set up. It looks like it's going to take a couple of minutes. Is it going to take a couple of minutes to just kind of, or we're going to be momentarily? Okay.
Thank you.
Remember, this is the Capitol Restoration Project. I'm not sure. Senator Nelson had a bill this morning. I'm not sure we have a bill number on it, but it's certainly something that most of us have heard about in some fashion or another, either out of the newspaper or conversations around the building. So I'm looking at the sign language here. So with us tonight is Mr. David Hart. David comes to us from the state of Utah, has been working with the Capital Preservation Commission, and for several months now. I'm not sure, it may go back to September or October, perhaps November, but has been working with the group for some time, has put together a large plan. I guess we don't have that before us, but you probably wouldn't want it on your desk anyway. It takes a lot of room. But he's going to present to us the findings and recommendations of the Capital Preservation Commission. And he's, as I said, done a lot of background work on this, so we look forward to hearing him. This obviously is the mother house, if you will, of the state Senate, so it's of particular interest, I think, to all of us in terms of what the ideas and plans are. So, Mr. Hart, welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. It's a pleasure to be here, and members, it's nice to be with you this evening. Before I start, I would like to start by thanking Senator Nelson, Senator Langseth, and Chairman Senjem, who are members of the Capital Preservation Commission and who have spent time with us working on this project. What I'm going to do tonight is give you a brief overview of the process that we went through with regards to the project, what the benefits are to the state of Minnesota, and then what the costs are. First of all, I think it's important, however, that we recognize that for the last 28 years, there has been a lot of planning that has gone on with the hopes of restoring the state capitol. I also would like you to notice that in 2008 and 2011, you started to move into a phase of asset prevention work. We are approaching a tipping point, if you will, of where the capitol will eventually just start to consume funds every year to maintain what we're doing. It's really important that we start to think about a restoration so that we can repair and fix those things that need to take place so that we're not caught up in a situation of ongoing and constant repairs in the millions of dollars. And so you're at a moment in time. 117 years ago, the Board of State Capitol Commissioners came together to make a momentous, monumental decision that was to build the state capitol. I believe that today you're at that same point, and it's critical for you to take the step and move forward with the restoration of the capitol. The planning process, we have developed a couple of documents. We were asked to put together a comprehensive master plan, which was one of the charges that was given to the Capital Preservation Commission. In addition to that, we have also done a preliminary pre-design so that the architects, when they're hired, will have a head start. One of the things that will be coming in the future if we move forward is the design guidelines and imperatives, which will help define and describe the scope further to the architects as we move forward. As we began the work, the commission gave us a few challenges. One was to focus on fixing the building, stay within the become good stewards and focus on the building. Two, we talked about the fact that we were at a tipping point. I've mentioned that just a moment ago. And three was to work within the footprint of the building, not to expand beyond the Capitol. And while there are obviously needs that may be met by expanding, to focus on the Capitol and to restore the Capitol. During those early days in the planning process, we identified three guiding principles. First was architectural integrity, and that was to preserve the architectural integrity of the building. This is one of the most beautiful capitols in the United States. In fact, I think NCSL has said it is the most beautiful capitol in the United States. And I would second that, coming from what I consider to be one of the most beautiful capitols in the United States, which is Utah. But you have a thing that we didn't have. You have an architect who is world-renowned. Cass Gilbert put this building together, and his legacy is this building, along with several others. But this is one of the greatest masterpieces that he did, and it deserves to be restored to its original character. The building function. We recognize that these buildings have a function to play, to keep government running and to keep things moving. Any restoration that has to take place within this building cannot usurp function. We still need to make sure the building works, and it's our responsibility to provide a plan and a direction so that government and the Senate, the House, and the other aspects of the government, other branches, can continue to function. Life safety and security is a must. We have to be able to protect this building, protect the occupants within the building, and to provide access to all who wish to attend meetings. The findings of the work that we did are as follows. First of all, the stone exterior is deteriorating rapidly, and it needs to be repaired and at least stabilized in the earliest phases before any kind of replacement or it can begin. The mechanical systems are at the end of their useful life, and we're starting to see deterioration and things that need to be repaired. The electrical systems are inadequately sized for a modern technological building. And new wiring and organization of that wiring needs to be put in place. Life safety systems need to be improved, such as smoke control, and currently we have limited sprinklers, and we need to look at how to move people out of the building in case of an emergency. Moving them down the grand stairs is not an acceptable exit path in an emergency. Technology systems need to be upgraded, and the accessibility is inadequate or non-existent for some of the areas. And that's obvious because back at the turn of the century when this building was built, they didn't have codes on wheelchair and accessibility and handicapped issues. The committee rooms need to be better organized. The public struggles to find some legislators that are within the Capitol. I can tell you that when I first came, it was sometimes difficult to figure out who was where. And I think that's something we need to focus on. That's not saying that we need to put everybody in the same room, but we need to take a hard look at how things are organized. Accommodations for visitors can be improved. Currently, there are little, and the school buses and school children who come to the Capitol need to have a place where they can visit. Communication between the Senate and the House chambers, that's one thing you may want to look at as we go forward. And then the restoration of the Capitol, we should do everything we can to set this building on a proper course for the next 100 years. Let's talk a little bit about the mechanical, because that is probably the biggest aspect facing us as we move forward, and one of those critical elements within the building. And so the big question of how do you approach the mechanical and electrical issues, or how do you make connections? To the outside, how do you determine where equipment location is going to be? Horizontal distribution is critical when you're dealing with it, as well as vertical distribution. As you know, there are many elements within the building currently. And what our plan is to try to reuse most of those areas, such as the vertical penetrations and the ductwork. However, they are inadequately sized and need to be expanded. And there are other areas, such as the roof, where we have found spaces, or within the attic, where we have found spaces where we can run some of these additional ductwork. And so, and place equipment. So one of the things that this plan accommodates is to provide a new system that is really a mix of two types of system. A mixed air system is more of a traditional type of forced air system, which will provide for ventilation and other aspects of the building. A decoupled cooling system is a system where it uses much higher concentrations of fresh air to be able to ventilate the building. For example, currently the rotunda is not ventilated. So you've all noticed after a large gathering of folks out there how stale the air is or how humid it may be within the building. That is because it takes time to ventilate the building. And so what we're proposing is most likely a mixture of these two. The decoupled system allows us to do a great deal of ventilation with smaller duct sizes and smaller areas. However, they are still going to be larger than what's presently in the building. Another thing we looked at was, as we do this, how is it going to impact the building currently? What are going to be the impact to the usable square footage within the building? They're going to be impacted, that we know of, in three ways. Mechanical and electrical, as we try to get back to the original plan of Cass Gilbert and have to enlarge those ducts, it's going to take some square footage. Restroom, which is a code-required thing to try to make the building more accessible and provide proper facilities. And then exit ways, so that in an emergency we have proper ways for people to leave the building. We are looking at about 7% of the usable square footage will be taken in these areas. Schedule goals. As we have put together the plan, we have been very careful to try and minimize the amount of time that's impacting the chambers. In fact, one of the things that we have taken a look at in the last little bit is how can we start with the areas around the chambers and move out so that by the time the session rolls around each year, you're able to continue to use those chambers. Initially, and in many state capitals across the country, we have to close chambers and relocate them and put them somewhere else. For example, in the state of Utah, we did that. In talking to your leaders, it seemed as though it would be the most prudent plan to try to find a way to keep those chambers available, and so we've worked at trying to identify those. The other thing that we recognize and have had long discussions on is how can we keep government functioning? Where do people move while we're going to be going through a little bit of a painful process of restoring the building? And how do we do that? Governor Dayton, in his address, 2012 State of the State address, said that this vote would be one of the most selfless votes of your career, to kick ourselves out of the building for the next 4 years. We're not asking for that. Mm-hmm. We're suggesting that there will be pain. You're going to have to move, and there will be some adjustments as we work in the different spaces. But as we bring on the construction manager and the architects to help plan and organize this, working with the Capital Preservation Commission, we will try to limit that pain as best we can and try to minimize any of the moves as best we can. However, it's a fact that it's difficult to work in your office with the ceiling down and the walls down. So there will be a little bit of inconvenience. Schedule milestones. We would like to start July 2012 with the design. We would then like to look at relocation, start the relocation process around July of 2013. So we have about a year to do the planning and make sure that we get things set up in the proper way so that things might be able to move forward, then start construction towards September of 2013, finish the major construction around September of 2016, with December of 2017 finishing the public spaces. Now, we have tried to organize the construction process into sequences so that we are able to move through the building efficiently and still keep it available for you to use. So the first thing we will do is to work with the Senate and the House and members of the Capital Preservation Commission to make sure that the plan works for everybody. Once that is accomplished, and I mentioned the goals earlier, we will make sure that we are able to use the chambers for the session. We want to limit, as I said, we want to make sure that the legislature is able to continue to function within the building and to minimize the disruption to the legislature as much as possible. Then the sequencing, each plan that we come up with will be evaluated with the legislature as well as with the commission, so that by December of 2012 we have a sequence that works for everybody. So what are the benefits of moving forward? First of all, we will be able to stop or get away from this tipping point and be able to put the building into a 100-year repair for the going forward, and be able to keep the scaffolding off the exterior of the building and allow the building to function. We will preserve the architectural integrity by slowing the process on the exterior of the building by doing the repairs that need to be done immediately, so that we can arrest that and then start to really look at what needs to happen in regards to replacement if necessary. The mechanical and electrical systems, we will provide new equipment both on the roof or within the attic and new ductwork, as well as the vertical access from the basement up. One of the things that's critical is that the mechanical system will actually wrap around, and so as we come up through the building, we'll be removing certain pieces of ductwork and putting in new pieces of ductwork, both vertically and horizontally in the building. That will then provide an opportunity for taking a look at how the offices are laid out or how other spaces in the building are laid out. And then the electrical systems will be upgraded so that the building functions as a modern building. Preserving the public spaces is very important. You have one of the most elegant public spaces in the United States with regards to the decorative arts, both in the painting, the fixtures, the light fixtures, and in the areas. And those will be looked at and taken care of as we go through this. As we moved along in the process, we wanted to make sure we had a good handle on costs, because when you're talking about a $241 million project, you want to make sure that you have done your homework and tried as best as you can to provide the necessary information. The first thing we did is we took a look at benchmarking, and we wanted to look at what other capitals who have gone through similar process has cost. We also then looked at escalation and tried to make sure that the scopes were in line. This is a table that breaks down a number of other state capitals, and you can see that the average overall cost is about $600 a square foot. This is on gross square feet. At this point in time, when we were looking at the Minnesota capital, if you just try and take some of the same scopes and you try to understand that, we were looking at about $198 million. As we've gotten further into it, we have recognized that that number is a little higher. And so the costs today are running, as we project, about $241 million. The benchmark number was about $600 a square foot, and at $241, we're at $625 a square foot. So it's within, I think, a reasonable range, and I think it tries to cover the needs that we've been able to identify within the capital. And so then finally, as I conclude, the appropriation of $241 million, we have taken a look at how that can be phased out over the next couple of years, with $77.4 million coming in this year, fiscal 2013, for the design, the exterior, and sequence A, which has to do with placing the ductwork and the mechanical systems both within the attic and up on the roof. FY 2014 would be about $69 million. That would allow us to move forward with Sequence C, which would be working in the west and the north wings. 2015 would be $41.6 million. That would be Sequence B, which is the east wings, would be worked in. And then FY 2006 would be $53 million, and that would be Sequence D, which would be the public spaces. Now, as I mentioned earlier, we are intending to try to keep the building as open as possible. So as we work in the public spaces, certain areas will be closed for safety, but we will make sure that the building is accessible as they kind of work around that. And I think some of you have seen that in the past when they've done some of the decorative painting repair and some other things. So, Mr. Chairman, that completes my presentation, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Hart and Senator Langsett.
Mr. Chair, I'd like you to go back to page 7, where it indicates the number of space lost. That says 12,050 square feet. We have a letter from Cal Ludeman from the Secretary of State's office that said we would lose 26,427 feet. That's more than double what it says here. And he indicates that there wouldn't be room for the Senate. I remember the time we had 49 people in the majority caucus. They were housed here. Mm-hmm. And afterwards, after when we no longer had 49, the courts freed up some offices. And I think that what they freed up there was probably more than the 7% we lose here. So it looks to me like we still got room for a substantial majority caucus. But I would really like to know what the Secretary of the Senate, Cal Ludeman, where he gets his figures when he says 26,000 square feet lost compared to 12,000 here. Now, I don't know if you can answer that at all or if you had any conversations with him or anything, but, I mean, the idea of this committee is to get information. Here we got 12,000, here we got 26,000.
Sure.
And I'd like to figure out which figure is right.
Sure.
Mr. Hart?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I believe what he is looking at is when we were going through and doing the analysis, we looked at some modifications to the basement, which would have utilized some space for opening up the hallways and some of those things. We also looked at some transitional space, some public space that might remove some of the space on the first, I think it's either the first floor where there's some staff space. The reason we are not including that is because we do not have a plan or a process at this point to be able to determine that amount of space. And so as the Capital Preservation Commission, the Senate, and the House work on the planning over this next year, we will determine whether or not that additional 12 or 13,000 square feet really exists, or whether it is just something that we identified early on and that direction is not where we're going to go. So I think that is yet to be determined. And I think that's the number. I haven't talked to Mr. Ludeman, but I believe that is the where he's getting that information.
Mr. Hart and members, and you all don't have this, but this is the big document. And there is a graph or table on page 26, and it talks about current square footage for the Senate is 77,027 and estimated new office square footage 50,600 square feet. Basically, one-third less of what we have now. So that may be his point of reference, I don't know, but when I read this last night, it was a point of at least interest.
Sure. And if I may?
Mr. Hart, yes.
Again, I think that's a decision that the Senate, the House, and the Commission need to sit down and discuss and debate. We were making a proposal based upon what we saw, and I think that it's only fair to allow the Senate and the House to kind of work through that.
Yeah. We have another guest. Would you identify yourself?
Mr. Chair, members, Wayne Wislowski with the Department of Administration. I just wanted to further comment on this difference in the square footage. Through the planning master planning process, it was identified that some of the committee rooms needed to be improved, and so that was a planning exercise to say if you repurpose space to create more hearing room space, mm-hmm. then you would obviously lose some of the office space. And to Mr. Hart's point is that decision point, what we know is when we do the modernize the mechanical systems, electrical systems, you are going to lose space for that. But if you don't create additional hearing room space, then you won't lose that office space. So you're essentially...
I'm not sure. Senator Stump and Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One of the questions I had was, early on you mentioned about working within the existing kind of footprint or area of the Capitol. A few years ago, I believe the proposal was that we have existing areas in the Capitol footprint that are not currently being used. And one of the areas is actually underneath the steps going out down the steps here. And one of the thoughts was that you mentioned there was a need for a more of a public place for visitors and I believe that area there was actually being proposed for kind of a large kind of gathering spot or could be an auditorium or whatever. Now that's kind of half in the footprint, I think, and half out of the footprint. So if, you know, and I don't know what the costs of doing that are, but it seems like if we're going to, you know, kind of shrink the footprint by losing space either to hearing rooms or to mechanical or whatever, maybe there should be some thought as to how much it would cost to use those spaces that are currently not being used. Another one is up above the House chamber. Behind the House chamber, there is a fair amount of usable space up there that currently just is not, I mean, it's used, but it's not really used.
Sure.
Mr. Hart?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I appreciate your comments, and I think that there are all of those opportunities. Again, we did not get into a hard and fast planning process that is to come once the architects are on board. What we were asked to do was to try to look at the issues that we can see within the building and try to figure out a way to resolve some of those. In discussions we've had with members of the House and within the members of the Senate, as well as others, we have identified those issues. And we would hope that as we go through the planning process that we would identify those things. I think that the space below the grand stairs is a space that is potentially usable. At what cost, I don't know. We did not figure that into the current estimate, but I'm sure that that's something that can be looked at as we go forward if that is the desire of the legislature.
Senator Pappas?
Senator Stump asked.
I'm sorry, Senator Marr.
That's right.
She's got it now. So
she's got it now.
Carry forward, Senator Pappas.
Senator Stump, I'm going to ask my first question, which you mentioned visitor services, but I wasn't sure what the plan is, and the plan is to come. I think it's really important that we do plan well because it's my understanding that most of the overrun costs are because of change orders. That you change your mind, you decide you want to do something else, and it's not in the original plan, therefore it costs more, right, to go back and undo or redo or whatever. Anybody who's gone through a home remodeling process knows that issue. At one point when this discussion, which has gone on for, I think, a decade, there was talk about a kind of a wing-by-wing plan because it's my understanding that most of the HVAC systems are vertical. So you go in and you remodel the entire north wing, you move everybody out of the north wing and you remodel that wing, or you go into the east wing or whatever. Was that something that has been looked at in your process, or did you just determine that kicking everybody out for 4 years was the most cost-effective way?
Mr. Hart?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, our current plan, we'll start with the... Let me first of all start with the cost overruns, if I may. I oversaw the restoration of the Utah State Capitol. It was a $275 million project. It took 10 years to do because of the way they wanted to do it. Mm-hmm. We, at the end of that project, because of the planning process we put together, which is what we have recommended for your capital, we were able to deliver back to them in savings $3-point-something million. So I think that you're absolutely right. Planning is the key to this. Part of doing that is to make sure that we have a good master plan that everybody agrees to, that we have a good set of design guidelines that we can communicate to the architects.
Not have buyer's
with.
Remorse where, oh, gee, I wish
That's
we had
right.
done that because we really should have.
Right.
Yeah.
And if you look at projects that have gone over budget, it is for that reason. So you're absolutely correct. With regards to the wing concept, mm-hmm. the first we have never advocated kicking everybody out of the building. We have always looked at it. And our first recommendation was to do it in sequences and close the east wing, mm-hmm. then take everybody out, and then take the west wing and the north wing, and before we move back in the east wing to complete the work, so that I guess there would have been a period when everybody would have been out. Mm-hmm. After presenting that and talking through that with members of the Senate, members of the House, and talking about how to relocate the chambers and where to put the chambers and how to deal with this, we came back and we said, we believe that there is a way to, if we start working around the chambers, because it's absolutely critical that when the session comes, if we're not going to move them, we have to be able to have the sessions, and we have to make sure that the clerk, chief clerk, and the secretary of the Senate can do everything that they need to do to make sure your sessions work. If we work out from those into other portions of the building, then that minimizes the chance that there would be a problem. And so we had looked at then working in the west wing and the north wing and trying to move down the building floor by floor, mm-hmm. and then doing the same thing coming up on the east wing to finish at the top. Okay. Further now, we have gone back and we've looked at it, and the type of mechanical systems that we're looking at, the basement systems will feed the ground floor and the first floor, mm-hmm. and the attic systems will feed the second floor and the third floor.
In the remodeling.
So that allows us to break the building at the midpoint vertically, because those some equipment will have to go all the way through, but the air and some of the other equipment only have to go 2 to 3 floors. And so that then gives us additional flexibility as we remodel to possibly only take down a quarter of the building rather than a half of the building. Okay. So we are looking at every possible way to minimize the disruption. There will be disruption, but we're looking at every possible way to minimize that disruption.
Senator Youngbauer.
Mr. Chair and members, and I guess just looking at this whole thing, it just seems wrong to me, having been part of this process for 10 years, is to me this building is the most important building in the state of Minnesota. It's the people's building. Times have changed. There's more and more people in this building all the time, as evidenced, I believe it was last Monday, as one good example. But it's more important than the PCA, the DNR, the DOT, and we need more space. And it needs to be part of the plan. And to do this without adding the more committee space and the more office space, and as we'd planned one time or talked about bumping out the corners for the HVAC, things like that, to really get the space seems to be way too little of a plan that we're, in my mind, going to for sure regret later if we don't do that. And I don't know why we don't just come to grips with, you know, I think that's our first step before we even look at this, is to say, is this or is this not the most important building in the state of Minnesota? And I think it is. I'm sad that we haven't been serious about that in the past. I haven't felt in these committees. I mean, some have, but others haven't taken it that serious.
Senator Youngbauer, I'm trying to rasp, but you just said that are you thinking about the
well, Mr. Chair, we've talked about
$300 million plan that we had a couple of years ago.
Yes, okay. Bumping out extra rooms under the front stairs, putting in new offices, new committee spaces. Our committee rooms are sorely undersized. They're not well utilized by the community, because, you know, how do you get in and out and fit and see the visual lines and stuff? And some of that is accounted for here, but not the fact that the public is partaking in the process to a much higher degree than ever before in history, and this doesn't seem to allow for that. We're just moving on with protecting the building, which of course we need to do. We can't let it deteriorate further and further. That's also a tragedy, but if we don't do it all, it's, I think, a bigger tragedy.
Well, Senator Jungbar, are you suggesting we don't have the plan that you would like yet?
Well, I don't think this is the plan, but I guess if I was going to bump it down to one question is, if we do it this way, can we still, is everything still in, have we done it in a way where we can still do those bump outs later without having to do some major engineering rework? I guess that would really be my question.
Mr. Hart?
Sure. Mr. Chair and members of the mm-hmm. committee, yes. I mean, I don't think that this would close the door on that. I think one of the things that, again, our charge was to stay within the footprint of the building. There are a number of options as we looked at the original plan that, or not the original plan, but the 2007 plan. It had a number of different extensions or opportunities for expansion. And I don't think this plan that we're proposing limits that in any way, shape, or form. I think that we will want to take a look and see what those options are. I know that, as you mentioned, in the state of Utah, for example, when we restored the Capitol, the spaces in the building were just not large enough to house a 200-seat committee room. That wasn't our charge right. at this point in time. But if that is something that comes up, I think the future is always there to where you can do some of those things.
Mr. Jumper?
Well, that's, again, to kind of further go down that road is, I understand your charge, but I guess I want to make sure that that kind of thing is built into the plan so we're not putting in place barriers, as Senator Pappas so aptly put it. Sometimes when you build something, you've precluded or exponentially increased the price of that potential add-on that we need to do later. And so I just haven't seen that part in this plan. And maybe it's because we're not, as individual senators, getting kind of the whole plan picture.
Mm-hmm. Was it Mr. Wazrowski?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Just a comment, and I think this is a really important point that Senator Jungbar is hitting on, that many members that have been involved in this for 10 years really recognize this. In 2001, there was a pre-design done, and it identified some of these functional needs that the House and Senate had, and the recommendation at that time was to build a second legislative office building. That was in 2001, and that plan didn't move forward. So then in 2005, the building is still deteriorating. We're still having the issues with the building. The legislature appropriates funds to update that pre-design, and they say when in that authorizing legislation, you can't look at a new office building. So the needs didn't change. There's the legislature, there were still needs for better hearing room space, some other additional things for the legislative functions. And so that's when you had the expansion to the south, where you had getting the full Senate into the Capitol building, as well as some of the visitors amenities that are being referenced. So then the charge came back again. That plan doesn't move forward. Building deteriorates further. All of a sudden, we recognize that our exterior stone is falling apart, and we get scaffolding that's around the building, and we get these perpetual asset preservation type projects that, if we don't do a comprehensive restoration, we'll be doing now every year for the next 100 years. So right. that. You're getting to the crux of the issue that's been occurring over the last 10 years. And really the focus of the commission was fix the building. This is the people's house. The people really expect that we're going to be good stewards of this building and take care of it. So it was fix the building. So the plan that's presented is about fixing the building. But that doesn't take away from some of these other functional requirements that are still out there.
And that's what I really want to be certain of in the end, that we have not
precluded
right. it or put barriers in that make it much more difficult to execute those kind of plans in the future. So
we would hope. I'm sorry.
Mr. Art?
I apologize. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, we would hope that it actually makes it easier.
Wonderful.
Because if we can know in advance what those issues are, and we can propose plans for future phases or future opportunities that would need the additional funding, that those things could be put in place early and save money going forward.
Mr. Chair, just to give an example of that and not to pitch another request that we have before you, but we do have a request for to build the tunnel across University Avenue, and really a large part of that is related to preserving the ability to connect to a potential future office building that could be built on Lot B.
Before the light rail goes through.
Before light rail occurs.
I have Senator Peterson, Tomasoni, Nelson, Higgins, Pappas, and Stump. So this is a...
Not an issue anybody's interested in.
A matter of much question. Senator Peterson.
I'll pass, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Tomasoni.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Stump asked my question, but I didn't actually see that you were considering the fact that we could possibly expand underneath the steps. And it seems to me that if we're talking about the possibility of doing the chambers and being able to use the chambers when the time comes, that if we were to actually fix the area underneath the steps and open it up, it would be something that could be done probably during the legislative session, probably not during the legislative session, but it wouldn't interrupt anything, and it would potentially open up a space that we could maybe use in the event that we need to close off another space. And so I think when you're planning that you might want to take a look at the possibility of doing that, because that's a huge space that we could use as a chamber if we needed to when one of the chambers is being used or for some other public purpose. And so I thought the expansion under the steps was a great idea.
Sure. Well,
Mr. Art?
Mr. Chairman and members, we're happy to look at that. I mean, that's not a problem. Like I said, it's currently not in the estimate for doing that, but there are ways to take a look at that and see if that's a higher priority than something else, and we can go in that direction. But I think the pre-design that was done in 2007 looked at that and did determine that it is feasible and that there is a number, I think, associated with that that we can easily find and provide if needed.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hart, I appreciate all the work that has been done on this and the changes that have been made, especially the discussions about the fact that we certainly should be able to do this needed restoration without closing the chamber. So I appreciate that change. You know, as we all discuss this, and I know you probably all go home in your districts as well, and everyone seems to realize the importance of restoring the integrity of this building and the structural soundness, whether they're my most liberal friends or my most conservative friends. People realize that this is really the house. This is the Minnesota house. This is the people's house. And we do need to protect the structural soundness and the integrity of this building. But it seems to me the question really comes down to the other things. And I don't know if HVAC is a structural integrity issue or if it's a quality of life issue. But one of the issues really seems to be, how much space are we going to lose for use because of things like an HVAC system or an upgraded HVAC system? And obviously, this isn't my area of expertise, but what it does seem a little odd to me is that in everything else, things are getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And HVAC systems that are designed in houses today are much smaller than the ones when we built our house 25 years ago. And so I'm just kind of curious if you can talk to that piece for me.
Sure.
Mr. Hart?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. The standard, and I've gone back to this slide, Senator, the standard mixed air system does rely on larger ducts and larger pieces of equipment because it does a mixing of interior air with exterior air to make up the air it's using. The newer systems, and therefore you have bigger return ducts and you have bigger supply ducts. The system that we are looking at, the decoupled cooling system, does rely on smaller ductwork. And so as we have met with the mechanical engineers that we've hired to look at this, we have tried to tie down and tighten those vertical duct chases as much as possible so that we are not expanding out into the office areas any more than is absolutely necessary. And we have gotten to a point where we're comfortable with the sizing that we're recommending. However, until we can get moving forward and get the engineering done, we don't know if we can reduce that further. This decoupled system will rely on a chilled beam type of element, which is a device that is placed in the office or in the space, which will provide a lot of the air and the cooling and the heating that will need to take place. And it does allow for smaller ductwork and smaller elements. However, it still requires that there are ducts and there are areas that are going to be disrupted. So I think we're trying to do what you're asking, but we're going to have to get further down the road with the architects and the engineers before we can give you a definitive answer as to how much smaller.
Okay. Mr. Chair, just a follow-up.
Senator Nelson.
Actually, just kind of a couple follow-ups on that. So we're talking about maybe that the ductwork won't be what would cause so much loss of space then. Is there a way to know, just looking at the HVAC system and what you anticipate with the chilled beam and the pieces you were talking about, just that area, not necessarily larger committee rooms, but just that piece, what amount of space are we looking at losing just with the HVAC? How many square feet?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, if you look at the chart here, the first line, usable area loss due to MEP, it's about 6,122 square feet.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Nelson.
So at a minimum, 6,000 square feet.
That's what we believe today.
Now, but we have 12,000 on the sheet here. Which would be for other things?
It's for stairs, because we have to provide exit stairs and toilets.
Okay, and then that brings me actually to my third question. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for your indulgence. And I'm not saying that we ought not supply those things, but I do recall in the Capital Preservation Commission, we did talk about that this building is not required to be up to code because of its historical significance. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, there are certain codes that we do need to conform to. There are some waivers that we can look at. I don't know, as I sit here currently, maybe Wayne knows, but I don't know if we can just waive these items.
Mr. Wasikowski.
Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, and this is actually the Attorney General did some research on this for the commission meetings. There are certain waivers, as Mr. Hart mentioned, but they will be very specific. For example, the idea of that we'd have to enclose the grand stairwell, that is something that would you typically get a waiver. But part of that will be coming up with a different solution for your exiting. They will require that we have enclosed exiting if we do a major restoration. It's very unlikely that we get a waiver from that type of life safety requirement.
Correct.
Mr. Hart.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I know that in Utah we were able to get a smoke waiver. And what I mean there is if there's a fire, smoke wants to tend to rise through the building. And so they require what's called a drop curtain at all openings, which would be required around all the openings in your building, which would be rather ugly. You do have coffered ceilings, and we can argue, for example, that the smoke could be trapped within those coffered ceilings. However, one of the conditions that was imposed on us, and I would not be surprised if it was imposed on you as well, is to provide stairwells, exit ways, enclosed exit ways, so that if there is smoke collecting, that people can get out without having to go through that smoke area. So those are the type of waivers that we will be able to get. And usually what comes with a waiver is not just a clear, you know, don't worry about it. It usually has a consequence. It usually requires some other means or some other method to deal with that waiver, if that makes any sense. Yep.
Senator Nelson?
And my final question, Mr. Chair. I think it'd be helpful if we've not already collected data on committee room use. In other words, I don't think every committee room needs to hold 200 people. Look how many people are here in this committee room and in many of the committees upon which I sit. But there are occasions where we do need to be able to house 200 people who are visiting, who are participating in a committee hearing. So I don't know if this group would know that, but I think we do need to start collecting data, if we're not already, on what type of use we're seeing in our committee rooms so that we can plan, I think, prudently. Not that every committee would need to hold 200, but certainly we have that ability when we need to. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Hart.
If I may, when we did the restoration in the members of the committee, when we did the restoration in the state of Utah, we commissioned, or we did a study of all the committee rooms. And we found that, in fact, you need large committee rooms, medium committee rooms, and small committee rooms. And there will be a mix that will need to be looked at. And that study will be done as the architects get on board. And so I expect that that'll be done. And I think that's a wise thing to do.
Finally, Senator Higgins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've been looking at that space right over there for as long as I've been sitting here. And I know that there's a little storeroom, and I have no idea what the rest of that corner is. Mm-hmm. And I'm assuming it might be part of the vertical distribution concept that Cass Gilbert came up with so very long ago. But I think all over the Capitol we have funny little spaces like that that, unless you're sitting here for hours, you probably never notice. And, you know, that's part of the space of this building as well. I wanted to ask about a couple of different areas. Has anybody done any looking around our campus or right off campus as to where there is space for the folks who work in this building to go when people need to be moved? I often, or as we were sitting here tonight, I thought it's too bad that we never got the Ford building
redone.
Well, that's
redone. My question. Could the Ford building be used?
Because
for that?
That would be a perfect spot for us, just right on the corner.
Mr. Hart, I don't recall we've had a lot, but go ahead if you have some
instincts. Mr. Chair and, sure. And members of the committee, I'll yield that to Wayne, who has done the work on looking into that.
Mr. Walskowski.
Mr. Chair, members, Senator Higgins, we first started looking at the buildings that are really adjacent to the Capitol building itself. Starting with the state office building, the cafeteria over in the state office building, I think everybody's aware, is underutilized. And so we've had discussions with House members on would that be a possible space that we could either convert to a hearing room or to offices. And they were very receptive to that idea. So we think looking at the state office building first would be our first stop. Commissioner Kronk has been very open to the idea of looking at the admin building, and what that would require us to do is move some of our existing divisions outside into other spaces, potentially even into lease space if necessary. But that is a possibility. It's obviously, again, we want to maintain that tunnel connection over to the admin building, so we've had discussions with the Senate IT folks on moving data center equipment over into, we have a raised floor, a room that has a raised floor in the admin building. So that potentially could work for data center equipment. So some of the support functions that the Senate has could potentially be relocated over there. Obviously, that's going to create some domino effects. We're going to have to find places for existing tenants to go. There's, some... We have the SWIFT project that's in the currently occurring staff in the Centennial Office Building in a year or so. That's expected that space is going to be freed up. So those are the kind of things that we're looking at. There's pockets of space here and there throughout the campus that are potential candidates. It is going to require some moving around of existing tenants to make it all work. One of the key challenges will be this question of the chambers and the floor sessions, and that's obviously why it's critical, if at all possible, to maintain, to be able to keep those chambers operational during the restoration. We hope that's possible, but we won't know for sure until we get the construction management firm on board to really evaluate it and look at the sequence of the work. That's a potential that we might have to look out at lease space to meet those types of needs if that needs to happen.
Mr. Hart?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. We have also included within the budget money for relocation, an estimate. I went back to this slide because we do need $2 million general fund in for relocation, and that is part of the FY 2013 request.
Mr. Chair,
Mr. Wasilowski.
That relates to Senator Thomasoni pointed out an earlier hearing or on an earlier bill that some of the costs are not bondable. The physical move is not a bondable expense, and therefore would be require general fund dollars.
So, Mr. Chair?
Senator Higgins?
I've been in a couple of other states' capitals Iowa when it was completed, which, of course, is just unbelievably gorgeous, especially compared to when I was about 13 and was there, and it was just so hideous. And then I was in Wisconsin's capital when they were restoring that building, and they did it phased as well. And you know, that just makes sense to me. The idea of moving everybody out for 4 years is, we have better options. And so I like the phased idea. I think that's just common sense.
Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And Mr. Rostodowski, you didn't talk about the Ford building. I mean, especially if that could meet our short-term needs and then be available for long-term needs.
Mr. Chair, Wasilowski. Senator Pappas, thank you for reminding me. That, as you know, the Ford building has been a point of conversation for a long time now. That building is currently vacant, and it has been vacant for over 10 years. It has suffered a lot of deterioration. It's not being heated, so it would require extensive renovations to get that building up to be occupied again. Estimates on that, depending on how you do it, would be $25 million was, I think, the last estimate that we had on fixing up the Ford building so it could be occupied. But that was certainly in the 2000, you probably remember in the 2007 discussions, that was a part of the debate, should that be the swing space. As Senator Thomasoni points out, the space underneath the Capitol, the idea once we expanded to the south, the idea was to do that first. So you had offices as well as you could hold the chamber sessions in that what would then become that visitor receiving area. So that was the swing space in the 2007 plan. So there's lots of variations on how to meet that need.
Mr. Chairman, just to follow up.
Senator
Pappas. So the $25 million estimate for the Ford plant, how does that compare to, like, new construction if we were going to build a new office building?
Mr. Wasilowski.
Mr. Chair, Senator Pappas, it would be as expensive or potentially even more expensive. One of the limitations would just be on the how you functionally lay out the space. Obviously, you're working with an existing building, the Ford building. You've been in it. It has a pretty unique layout of the space. And the structural supports that go with it. So you would have, you'd lose some efficiency in the space. New construction would be more efficient. So it potentially would be on a per square foot cost more expensive than new construction. And it wouldn't give you probably the type of space that ultimately, if you're building an office building, you'd build it to meet your functional requirements.
Mr. Wasilowski, I seem to remember, and I'll stand corrected, but maybe Senator Langsett can help, or others on this committee, that we went through the discussion of that building, I don't know, 5 years ago, and it seems like, the warnings about even continuing to use it were so bad that we just had to vacate it. I want to say even somebody suggested the whole front wall might fall off or something like that at some point. I don't know if all that was overstated or not, but... Do we have that kind of a building that we have to bring into repair to even consider reoccupying it?
Mr. Chair, if the committee would be up for one more tour, I think you'd find it fairly interesting. No, that deterioration that was described 5 years ago has only gotten much worse. You'll see there's actually a mesh, the fencing that we've put around to encapsulate some of the exterior. We've had to take off remove several pieces of the brick exterior because they were in danger of falling. We continually are putting money into a building that is not occupied and not used. And this has been an just to keep it safe from a life safety standpoint. And so this is an issue that, it's one of those that we either need to fix it or demolish it. This year we included in our capital budget request, a request for demolition. It was more to, again, get it back on the radar for discussion. If it is a legislative priority to maintain and preserve that building, then that's a building that we have to make a decision on one way or the other.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Stump.
I'm going to pass.
Senator Tomassoni.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this probably goes without saying, so I probably shouldn't say it. But the next 100 years, I think, is a very important concept here. And so I'm hoping that even though $241 million is a great big number, that we're not going to do this on the cheap. And no. What I mean is, let's get this right on the first try, and if it comes to 290, then let's spend the 290. But I think that it's very important that what ends up happening now is done for the next 100 years, and that we get it done to the needs of the next 100 years.
I have a couple of questions. I just want to make sure I'm getting this right, and I have maybe the benefit of the big plan. But as I look at the plan, we would vacate a large part of the space under us, which is a lot of research space, and it looks like we would make two meeting rooms somewhat comparable to this down there on the north side and the south side. And then we would take the, where I call the computer room, and media services, and that would be gutted. I don't know where we move the computer. And that would be a meeting room. And then the room directly across would become a twin of this room, as I see it. And help me when I'm incorrect. And then the space above here that Fishbach and Roebling are in, and Vickerman and Bach were in previously, would be opened up, and that would be a meeting room.
That's crazy. Those are.
And then, correspondingly, on the other side of the building, I think that already is a meeting room. And then, of course, on third floor, correspondingly, 318 and the other one, I think that the lobbyists are in or would be a meeting room. But am I right? The space below here would become twin meeting rooms much like this, and the IT would go, and that would become a meeting room? Because that's what I'm seeing here. And then, correspondingly, the Gerlach, Han, or Ortman, used to be Pappas, Anderson Suite, that would be a meeting room. There's a lot of meeting rooms there, but there's also, I think, you start to cut in some office space that might be kind of valuable.
Mr. Chairman, I'm wondering, do we need more meeting rooms, or do we need a few larger ones that are better designed?
Well, these are important questions.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Hart.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. What we did, we have not gone through and proposed a new layout. We don't know what type of scenario or what type of office space, or we haven't done any of the programming. What we did do is we looked at the building that we have, and we have identified within the building opportunities if the Senate and the House and the Capital Preservation Commission so choose where space can be rearranged. We have indicated using the colored drawings that you see where the opportunity for committee rooms would go. We do not know how many committee rooms you need. We do not know the size of those committee rooms at this point in time. And certainly, if you don't think you need a committee room in a place, we're not going to propose putting a committee room in a location. That work has yet to be done by the architects that we still need to hire. What we simply did is we looked at the bones of the building, so to speak, that Cass Gilbert provided. Cass Gilbert went through and very carefully identified in his plans large spaces and small spaces. As we looked at that, we simply said the larger spaces seem to make good sense to open up, similar to what you've done in this space, to make those a committee room if you so choose. The smaller spaces seem to make more sense for office space, staff space, and other types of space, secondary space, for functional needs rather than taking a large space out. And so all we're suggesting is that you look at the bones of the building as you try to prioritize the space needs that you have, and then try to determine as we go through the restoration how many committee rooms you need, where you would like those committee rooms, how many offices you need, and where you would like those office space. We're not proposing any plan at this point in time. We are just proposing that there are opportunities for where things may want to be relocated, and that this next year, between July of 2012 to the end of the year and into the early part of next year, is that time when we would be meeting with the Senate and the House and members of the Capital Preservation Commission to make those decisions. I hope that helps.
Mr. Archer, if that is the, I guess it's when do we proceed with bonding on this project? Do we proceed ahead of what we, you know, before we really know what we want? And right now it's all conceptual, I guess. Or do we proceed once we know what the plan is? And I don't know. Usually you proceed once you know what the plan is. But Senator Pappas had her hand up.
Mr. Chairman, just a little bit of history. That 123 was originally a committee room, and it was underutilized. And so during the Carlson administration, there was a deal with Governor Carlson. He wanted the space below the governor's office for staff. And my office was down there. I think Senator Hottinger, Senator Speer, and Senator Flynn were down there. And
governor's office?
Below the governor's office. It's all staff space now. Yeah. And so the trade-off was then he agreed to okay money in the bond. He built a remodel 123, which was a committee room originally, into four office spaces, if you consider the one next to it, which was the former Senator Cohen space.
I believe that was 121. This is 123.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, 121. Yeah, right across the hall. Right, sorry.
Senator Higgins, do you have your hand up?
I did, but Mr. Hart answered my question because you had identified like five new meeting spaces, and I was trying to figure out what we would do with them all.
Yeah, but they're all just potential.
Options.
Okay. Mr. Chairman?
Senator Tomasoni.
You know, Representative Begich used to say that if it's already in color, it's a done deal.
The wisdom of the range.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Higgins?
I do think that we should proceed with the bonding. I mean, if you're going to wait till all the details are worked out, you know.
Then you don't have the money.
Yeah, then we'll never get there. But I think the phased approach with the money and just, you know, getting it started, it sounds like they have a plan, a good idea of the guts of the building that need to be worked on, HVAC and all that kind of stuff, you know, the basement and all those kinds of things. So as we're continuing to refine what the final project would look like, there's lots of work that can be done, if I understand correctly.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Chairman, I think the question is, you know, do we bond in phases as we're moving through the project, or we upfront it? And I think that's the question. We have to do, I think, if we're going to do this, we got to get some bonding this year to at least get things rolling. And I don't know, they talk about future legislators can't be bound to anything, but I think once you get this going, I think that'll kind of fall in line. But I have a little bit of a problem with $240 million in this bonding bill. I mean, I understand why it'd be kind of nice, but
it's a lot of flood control.
I also know that it would squeeze an awful lot of other stuff out.
Mr. Oslowski, did you have a comment to this?
A comment on
let's let Mr. Wazowski comment to Senator Langs and then come back.
Mr. Chair, members, I just would mention that a lot of these decisions that you're discussing and debating are decisions that will be made during the design process, and I think that's what you're talking about, is we need to get that process going. We need to get the architectural firm on board. We need to get the construction management firm on board to, first of all, meet with Senate folks that know your business and can tell us what the functional requirements are for the Senate, and that's going to include the hearing room space, office space, all of those requirements. That's just part of the design process. And David, maybe you could just talk about the design workshops that would be part of the process.
Mr. Hart?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, this is a very similar process to what we used at the Utah State Capitol. It does take money to hire an architectural firm, to bring contractors on, and to go through and to very carefully plan the process. One of the things that's yet to be done that I mentioned early on are design guidelines. Part of those design guidelines are programming documents and trying to figure out what the configuration, if any change, is going to take place to the physical space within the building. What we do, or what we're recommending, is that as we move forward, we will take the various design elements and we will conduct a workshop with the architect. We will invite members of the Senate, we'll invite members of the House, we'll invite members from the commission and other stakeholders to come in and participate in those workshops and to discuss in depth the issues, the needs that need to take place. And we will then analyze those things. And if we need to make adjustments or changes, we will do that within the balancing of the overall funds. It's important to be able to go through and look at each one of those. It's a different process than the standard architectural process. The typical architectural process is you hire an architect, they do a set of schematic designs, you review the schematic design, you then do a set of design development documents, and then you go into a set of construction documents. As an architect, practiced for over 25 years, that process does not solve the needs that you have in a fluid building such as a state capitol. So what we did is redesign the process so that all of the stakeholders, all of the individuals can have the input that is necessary to the planning process. We also need to take into account the political process and how it works within your building so that the building is designed and can function for the political process that you use. And so we will use probably 16 to 17 workshops to go through and to look at all the different issues so that when we do finally get a set of schematic design documents, that they have been clearly vetted, they have been reviewed, and they have been approved by all the stakeholders going forward so that it is not designed to just one constituent or one element.
Mr. Wazowski?
Mr. Chair, I really want to focus in on this point and why this is so important. We got a $3 million plan sitting on a shelf from 2007. That's about what we have in as a state into that plan that didn't move forward. The last thing we want to do is go through another planning process and at the end of the day not actually deal with the problem and preserve the building. So this gets into the process that David described, but it also gets into the approach to funding this project and the level of commitment that we have to make if we're really going to accomplish this restoration.
Mr. Hart?
And just one last comment, if I may, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. That's why it's important to make a significant bond at this point in time. If you do another small repair size bond, then people will treat it as a small step forward, and it won't happen. If you do a larger, significant step, whether it's the whole 241 or whether it's 150 or some large number, then people will take it seriously, and they will pay attention to it, and they will recognize that it's going to move forward. That was the experience that I had on the Capitol. Once we made the decision to move forward, they funded a certain portion of it, and we moved forward.
Senator Stump, I think you had your hand up.
Yes, thank you. Mr. Chairman, in that first part of the initial bonding, and we've been spending most of the time talking about the interior of the Capitol, but the exterior, it seems like that could actually move forward in a way that could start, I don't know how soon, but obviously a lot sooner than the interior. Mm-hmm. And could you just spell out what portion of that exterior could be, is part of that $77.4 million?
Wayne, do you want to go ahead?
Mr. Wasgowski.
Mr. Chair, Senator Stumpf, the legislature in 2008 and again last year has appropriated asset preservation funding for the Capitol building. We're actually, you've probably been aware of that last year we did a comprehensive assessment of the exterior stone and identified the deficiencies and the deterioration with the stone. We are actually moving forward with the design on both the repairs to the exterior stone, replacement of the windows, which makes, they're at the end of their useful life. It makes sense to do that work at the same time while you have the scaffolding in that area. You replace those windows, repair the French doors. Everybody, I think, have seen the condition and deterioration that we have on the French doors, as well as down the road, do the roof replacement, which is at the end, the main roof, which is at the end of its useful life. So we are currently using existing funding to move ahead with the design portion for the exterior stone repairs, windows replacement, as well as the French door replacement. The roof we put on hold because of the mechanical solution that is proposed would bring in air handling units into the attic space. And obviously we don't want to, we want integrity in that roofing system, so we will wait to move that project forward before going forward with the roof replacement. So that's triggered the need to do additional repair work on the roof to stop some of the current leaks.
So, Mr. Chairman, could
Senator
you
Stump.
Just give us an indication that is some of that $77.4 million part of the exterior?
Mr. Chair, Senator Stump, thank you for the follow-up question. We only have the design money that's with the current funding. The actual cost of implementing that work is in that 77.
Mr. Wasowski, I just follow. If so, we've given, you know, there's been money allocated, but 77.4 million. If we just did all that, would the exterior be well, and we'd have some design and some whatever sequence A is, an attic, and but if we did 77 million, would the outside be fixed up? I guess in the simplest way to say it.
Mr. Chair, if I may,
Mr. Hart,
and members of the committee, the funding currently, you're correct, that would take care of the repair and arrest the weathering. However, it would not do a lot of some significant replacement. We need to get the repair done first on the stone, stop the water infiltration, stop the deterioration as best we can, and then there will need to be an assessment to go back and to determine what has to be replaced. But yes, the 77 does include doing just that.
Just a quick comment, just a clarification on that. It doesn't even include the roof replacement. Again, we've put that into later phases because of the coming into the attic space with new air handling units. What it does include is the exterior stone repairs that David described, as well as the replacement of the windows and the repairs to the French doors.
Can I just ask, there's a lot of, I'll just call it artistic stone.
Yeah.
Would that be repaired under the $77 million, or is that for another day and
so,
another dollar?
Mr. Chair, members, this is a very important point to make. This the project that we're talking about, the number that the original estimate that came in at the $17.5 million in construction cost for the repair work, that is repair only. That is not replacement of the existing. It's not, we're not replacing the eagles. We're not replacing some of the carvings that are deteriorating. It is to stop the water that's getting behind the walls through the cracks. It's to the extent we can with that sugar, and you've all seen, you know, we can certainly bring over some additional pieces, but that sugaring that's going on, if you rub your hand up against it, it just crumbles down. You're only going to slow that down. So that is going to be, you know, through the life of this building, that exterior stone is going to have to go through a process of replacement and restoration over time.
And Mr. Wasowski, that just to say it, that would not, okay, that's not part of 77 million. That's
right.
That's new money.
And
probably fairly expensive money.
Yeah, and Mr. Chair, we're not recommending, nor did the the experts that we hired, you've heard us talk about that. We brought in national experts. Wish Janney was the firm. It's the same firm that worked on the Washington Monument and the Washington Cathedral after the earthquake last year. They're really material scientists. They know this type of stone and how it weathers and how it ages and deteriorates. They did not recommend that we do dramatic replacement of stone at this time. They said that you can, and you know this from your own experience and the experience of your constituents, if you're not up close to that stone, it still looks very beautiful. Once you get up close, you see the details that are slowly wearing away. That's the thing that over time, as those details do get to a point where you're losing, so it no longer looks good from a distance, that's when you will have to move forward with more of a replacement project. Fortunately, the quarry's still active in Georgia. It's still there. The original stone is still available for restoration type work like this. So in the future, when we need to go to that level, we can do that. An example of cost on that, the New York Public Library, if you've ever seen that, it has it's not Georgian marble, but it's a marble exterior. They just did a $50 million restoration of their stonework. So that can be a very expensive effort over time.
Anyone else? Any questions? Well, this has been a good discussion. There's a lot of information here, and this is a big decision, so thank you very much. Somebody over here. Senator Tomasoni?
Can I assume we're not going to have any of these screens around anymore like this?
Yes.
Not for $240
million. Less screens. Projector screens?
Yeah, Mr. Hart? If I may, we have figured in a number that would provide new technology to your committee rooms that would allow for more of a modern type of display system.
Mr. Hart, as was commented earlier, I suppose in Council and Mr. Jensen will help us, but there's some of that I suspect that can't be, well, maybe so, I don't know, bonded for. And that's just the rules. Anyone else on anything here?
Mr. Chair, I was just going to offer that I know you've looked at the full master plan. If other members are interested, we can certainly try to provide a link to the website. There's a lot of work that's gone into the planning on this, and we can certainly make all that information available to the committee.
I don't know if you'd be available for individual caucus meetings or whatever, but this is...
Sure, we'd be happy to.
This is of great, not grave interest, but great interest, I think, to
We'd be happy to do that.
Mr. Okay. Chair, just
Senator Nelson.
One comment. I did look that up online, and the bill I introduced today does have a number. It's Senate File 2531, and just to note, it's a starting place. It's not perfect, but it's for $221 million, $60 million in each of the years 2013, 14, 15, and $41 million in 2016. And Senator Rest also
Senator
signed on to that
bill. You're deviating from the plan.
I'm deviating from the plan. I think we can do better.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, both of you. I appreciate you coming from Salt Lake. That's very beneficial. And again, we appreciate your information and your work, and thank you so much.
Thank you. Happy to be here. And if you have any questions, please let us know.
Good. Meeting stands adjourned.